Welcome, fellow gardeners and aspiring gardeners, to In the Garden, hosted by UC Master Gardeners. My name is Mark Fairley, a Master Gardener, and I will be hosting the show today. By the way, you are listening to KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine. And the opinions expressed on this show do not necessarily represent those of the management of KUCI or the Board of Regents. And for more information, go to KUCI.org. Okay. Today our program will feature a special guest on a very appropriate topic right now. Her name is Jennifer Pelham. Jennifer is the Area Environmental Horticulture Advisor for both Orange and San Diego counties, and that is a big job, folks. Welcome, Jennifer.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Before we get our show underway, can you tell us a little bit about yourself, where you're from? And I know this is a new position for you. What were you doing before?
Yes, well, I just moved here from Florida. I worked for the University of Florida Extension Service in Orlando, and just 3 months ago, I moved here to Southern California.
Isn't that something? What do you think about it so far? It's a little bit different than in the climate here in Florida, right?
It's a lot different. I am definitely really enjoying the low humidity. In Florida, the humidity is so high.
There is a difference, isn't
A little bit of a difference.
And also, are you finding any difference in what you're seeing as far as... before I get into that, let me just ask. The areas that you are involved in environment and horticulture, tell us a little bit about that.
I actually study all aspects of horticulture. My favorite subjects in horticulture include urban forestry, integrated pest management, landscape design.
Very good. And today we're going to talk about bugs and pests.
Correct.
So let's get on with it a little bit and see where we're going from here. This is bugs and pests, IPM, are a big interest of yours. Where did you get your background in that?
Well, I actually have a master's degree from the University of Florida in pest management.
Okay. So we are talking with an expert.
Right.
And are the bugs in Florida and the pests in Florida different than what you are seeing out here?
Yeah, some are the same, but there's also some different pests out here in California versus Florida. I think there might be more diseases in Florida, where out here there might be more insects that you might encounter.
Well, it's interesting. I heard you speak once before about what happens with the pests in Florida. What happens with them? Tell our audience.
A lot of times when new pests come into Florida, and they usually come up through the Caribbean, I've heard a lot of experts say when pests come into Florida, eventually they find their way into California.
Really?
And it could be because not really similar climates, but kind of a similar temperature range.
At least it's warm. Huh?
It's warm, yeah. It's definitely warm, and that's what the pests like.
But so we don't get the rain that many parts of Florida does on a regular basis.
Right. So that's why a lot of the diseases that are found in Florida, plant diseases, as well as some insects, won't survive out here because of the lack of rain.
I gotcha. And I was just wondering, this for my own personal interest, is the drought creating more more volume of pest, of maybe the same pest as because of the vulnerability of fragile trees from the drought? Has that made an impact?
It definitely could have made an impact. And the reason is when plants are stressed, and drought is a main stress factor of plants, their defense mechanisms decrease. So they can't defend themselves from different pests or insects. Just like humans, when we get stressed out, we tend to get more sick because our immune system decreases. And that's very similar with plants. So the drought could be weakening their defense system, their system, making them more vulnerable to the pests.
Is there anything that you would recommend that our audience, our listeners, do to help protect their trees or their shrubs or whatever may be stressed?
Definitely want to look at the cultural factors of your plants. So how are you taking care of them? Are they getting enough water, too much water, enough fertilizer, not enough fertilizer? And by keeping your plants healthy and caring for them properly, it allows them to ward off the pests and the insects a lot easier.
Reduce the amount of stress. Keeping them clean also is helpful.
Yes, definitely. Sanitation. So if you have a lot of leaves that fall off your plant, raking those up around the plant, especially if they're diseased, can prevent disease from spreading to other leaves on the plant. That's one part of keeping them clean, too. And
very good. How about mulching?
Mulching can definitely help. You need to be careful with the mulch. We recommend 3 inches of some type of bark mulch is usually a good mulch to use around the plant. And make sure you keep it around the base, keep it away from the base of the plant. You don't want to bury the base of the plant in the mulch.
Why is that?
That increases the humidity around the trunk of the plant or around the base of the plant, which if it gets too wet, then you can start having the bark start to peel away, and then the plant can be more vulnerable. To other diseases and insects, too.
I see. That sounds very reasonable to me.
Mm-hmm.
And that is, to me, for our audience, probably the greatest piece of advice. Keep it at least 12 inches away from the base of your tree. But do mulch. It's a cheap way to save water and do a lot of other good things.
Mulch also suppresses weeds.
Suppresses weeds.
As long as you have it 3 inches thick, and that's the key. A lot of people will spread it too thin.
Right.
You got to have it 3 inches thick.
Biggest problem I have with it is I mulch every year. I usually get about a yard, and I don't have a big yard, but a yard of mulch from a local place, and the only problem is the guy that cuts my lawn and blows it all away.
Oh.
So I have to be very strict with them when they come, and I'll let them know, let that be, at least for a while.
You like your mulch, yes.
I like my mulch. But it's inexpensive. Certainly the cost of plants that die and weeding, et cetera, is
right. Plus, mulch looks nice around the plants,
does,
too.
That's for sure. Now, one of the key things, we're talking about bugs and pests. And you mentioned IPM. What does that mean?
IPM stands for Integrated Pest Management. And what that is using a lot of different methods to try to reduce the pests in your landscape. So it's not just using chemicals, or it's not just picking insects off with your fingers. It's using a couple different methods in your garden to reduce your pests.
Could you explain a little bit about that?
Sure. There's 5 methods that you want to use to prevent pests in your garden.
And they're all very simple, aren't they?
They're very simple. The first one is cultural. So cultural is just, like I said before, is keeping your plants healthy. The healthier they are, the more likely they can ward off insects and diseases and other types of pests.
How do we do that?
Well, you want to make sure that you water your plants efficiently. You don't want to get too much water. You don't want too little water. You want to make sure that You plant them in the right location. If they're sun-loving plants, make sure they're in the sun. If they're shade-loving plants, make sure they're in the shade. We like to call this right plant for the right place.
Gotcha.
And fertilizer, if they need fertilizer, make sure you fertilize appropriately. Sometimes people can get a little generous on the fertilizer and apply too much. So you want to make sure
What's the most important thing about fertilizer?
The most important thing about fertilizer, in my opinion, if your plants look and are performing good, you probably don't need to fertilize them. But if they're starting to show some nutrient deficiencies, then they might need some fertilizer.
A little bit of fertilizer. Mm-hmm. But probably the most thing about applying fertilizer is what you said, applying. Oh. Too much is not necessarily better.
Is that the way to explain it? It's really important to read that label on the back of your fertilizer bag and apply the right amount and in the right location. Because fertilizers, a lot of people don't realize this, is that they can contain salts. And if you put too much fertilizer out on your plants, those salts that are in the fertilizer can burn the roots of the plant. It just dries them up.
Absolutely. So, and I know for a fact, too, that water, because of the drought, that the water districts, talking with Darren Haver, our water expert,
right,
that they have added more salt to the water supply, salt and something else that isn't good. But so using the right, too much water is bad.
Too much water is definitely bad. You can... the roots need to be in well-drained soils, and if you had too much water and have poor drainage, the plants are going to drown.
Good. Well, let's get into that a little bit more about the methods.
Okay.
But maybe we can go off a little bit. We mentioned pests and bugs. Is there a difference?
Yes, there's definitely different. All bugs are pests, but not all pests are bugs. Pests include a number of different things that can affect plants. Plant diseases are considered a pest. Weeds are considered a pest. Insects or bugs are considered a pest. Critters that might come into your yard and eat your plants. Snails. Children that might come stomping through your landscape can be considered pests.
So I remember those days.
So there's a lot of things that can be pests in the garden.
I was probably the pest.
You're probably the pest stomping through your neighbor's garden. but those are all pests, and insects or bugs are included in that category.
Now, some people think that all bugs are pests. Is that correct?
No, that's definitely not correct. Actually, if you look at the world of insects, less than 10% of all insects in the world are actually considered pests. Pests to plants, humans, or structures.
That's interesting because if that's correct, if we don't have any bugs, we're lacking something in our gardens. Isn't that correct?
If you don't have any
bugs at all.
If you don't have any insects in your garden at all, you might not have...
We may not have bees.
You might not have bees. You might
or
not have
wasps or things that pollinate.
Right. Pollinators are very important. So if you don't have flowering plants in your garden, you're not going to bring in the pollinators like the honeybees or the bumblebees and the other native bees that could be out there. And
We can go on here. You mentioned some methods of control, cultural, that I assume includes plowing, crop rotation.
Correct.
Proper watering, we talked about, removing pest residue, because that comes up. Good ways to do it, a little spray of water. Right?
To wash off the leaves, correct.
Wash off the leaves.
Mm-hmm.
And... physical or mechanical, another method?
Yeah, physical and mechanical are two other methods. Physical would be like the mulch. When you use mulch to suppress weeds, that would be a physical barrier. Or if you put weed cloth down to suppress the weeds, that would be a physical barrier. Putting up plants as a windbreak to keep out diseases, as diseases come in through wind, would be a physical barrier.
So those are very legitimate horticulture environment subjects,
right.
Ways to control your plants, keep them, mm-hmm. keep the pests suppressed with minimum impact on our environment.
Exactly.
As such.
Yeah.
That's probably what we're trying to do.
And putting another physical method is putting up a fence around your garden to keep out the critters.
Yeah.
That's physical, a barrier. Mechanical ways to control pests include picking them off your plants with your hands, like caterpillars or
snails
and
things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
exactly.
And you mentioned there are several other methods that are integral to IPM.
There are two more that we haven't discussed yet, and the one is biological. And biological is trying to encourage or just be aware that we have other organisms out there that are helping to control the bad insects for us.
Very good.
There's good bugs out there to control the bad bugs.
Like ladybugs.
Ladybugs, right? Green lacewings, praying mantis. There's a lot of parasitic wasps, which are these teeny tiny wasps that will lay eggs in the back of certain insects.
And end them up. Going to take a break for a half a second here to let our listeners know that we are tuned to 88.9 FM. That's KUCI in Irvine. Okay, back on. You mentioned there's one other.
And the final one is chemical.
Okay.
And so we're not saying IPM is not using chemicals at all, because in some circumstances you have to use a chemical to control the insects or the diseases. And chemical is kind of the last method on our little IPM toolbox. However, it's an important one, but we need to keep in mind that if we are going to use a chemical way to control our insects, is that we want to find the least toxic and also the least expensive chemical to control the bugs or control the diseases.
Can you give us a few examples of some chemicals and some of the things they suppress?
Two of the most popular for our landscapes and for our vegetable gardens would include horticultural oils or insecticidal soaps. And these two are both organic pesticides and also very safe to use.
And they're also good on your fruit trees, right?
Correct. You can use them on your fruit trees.
In fact, I just got done in January, putting a horticultural spray on all my fruit trees.
Okay.
Hopefully to prevent leaf curl and things like that, right?
Mm-hmm.
Good.
Yep. Yeah, those are two of the easiest ones to find also in the garden centers, if you can look for horticulture oil and or an insecticidal soap.
Good. Anything else?
There's also quite a few chemicals out there. If you don't want to go with an oil or a soap, there also are the synthetic pesticides that you can use. And I really want to stress that if you get a pesticide to use, that you make sure you read that label. You know that large label that comes out and extends for a foot beyond the bottle? It's important to read that and learn how to apply pesticides correctly.
That is as good of advice as anybody could get. Whatever you do, follow the directions, because that's very important.
Exactly. Make sure that you're using the right chemical for the right location. You don't want to use a chemical that's for your landscape plants in your vegetable garden, because it might be too harsh for some of your vegetables. So you need to make sure that the plant that you want to spray it on is on the label.
Very good. How about neem oil?
Neem oil, that's another organic pesticide. It's a botanical. It's from the neem tree.
Right.
They press the leaves and get up the oil. It's both an insecticide and it's a fungicide.
Okay.
However, it is a harsh chemical, so even though it is organic, you still need to be careful with it because it can be dangerous if you use too much of it or don't apply it properly.
And basically, they repel pests. Is that correct?
They don't really repel. They control better if they if you spray the pests directly and they suffocate them. The oil suffocates them.
Mm-hmm. How about BT? That is always a popular one among master gardeners.
Yes, BT is, and I don't know if I can pronounce this properly, but it's Bacillus thuringiensis.
You did
and
good.
It's a bacterium. It's a natural bacterium that occurs, and it only affects caterpillars.
So where you have a caterpillar infestation, mm-hmm. BT is a good
BT thing. BT is the perfect choice because it doesn't affect any other organism on the face of the earth but caterpillars. However, you need to remember that if you have a butterfly garden in your landscape,
you're going to be in trouble.
A butterfly caterpillar is the same as a caterpillar that's in your vegetable garden, and the BT will kill both of them. So don't spray BT in your butterfly garden.
No, I know Florida has great tomatoes, right?
We do, but it does...
At certain times,
usually in the winter. In the summer, we can't grow tomatoes.
Right, but that's where we get our tomatoes.
In the winter, yes.
A lot of them
mm-hmm.
come from Florida, as well as Mexico and other places.
Right.
But hornworms here is an issue. And I'm sure it is in any place that has tomatoes.
Yeah, they're scary looking, but they actually don't bite or sting.
No.
It's a large green caterpillar that can probably get 3 or 4 inches long as he eats and eats and eats and eats. And if you have those on your plants, because they like tomatoes, but they like all other plants too, the easiest thing to do is pick them off and step on them.
Squish them.
Throw them in a bucket of soapy water if you don't want to squish them. Some people will take their pruners and cut them in half and have the juice go everywhere.
How do you recommend disposing of pests that you have picked up?
Okay.
Is there
if you picked them up, a bucket of soapy water is probably the best, so then it doesn't get too gory by stepping on them.
Right.
But if you prune off limbs off of plants that have pests on them, say they're smaller pests like aphids or mealybugs or whitefly, you would want to take that limb or that leaf that you pick off your plant and put it in a plastic bag and tie it up and dispose of it in the garbage. You don't want to put it in the landscape bin, or you don't want to put it in the compost that the bugs can just fly off that plant in your garden again.
Back to you.
Right.
Again.
Right.
So those are really good suggestions. Tell us a little bit more about not only IPM, but IPM uses chemicals, but as a last resort.
Right, correct.
And there are many other methods. Probably the best thing is, I've always thought, at least since I've become a master gardener a number of years ago, is keeping the area clean.
Right.
Clean garden, you won't get bad bugs.
Right.
You might, but they will be less frequent. Is that correct?
That's correct. Yeah, you want to make sure that you clean your garden. You don't want the weeds to grow up because weeds can fester a lot of diseases and insects that will seek protection in the weeds. You want to make sure that you keep your plants pruned properly. And that goes with cultural methods too.
A lot of our gardeners go to the nursery mm-hmm. to not only buy seeds, but buy transplants.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And I know that transplants, if we buy from the nursery, are supposed to have been inspected.
Okay, right.
But oftentimes we get transplants from our neighbors or friends or other master gardeners. And any good methods that you have to make sure that we don't have a bug or a pest infestation on transplants?
Yeah, you definitely want to inspect your plants before you're bringing them home from the nursery or from your friend's house.
How do you do that? Do you look at the underside? Or
yeah, definitely the underside of the leaf. A lot of the insects are going to be hiding on the underside of the leaf away from you, and they're trying to disguise themselves. So flip over the leaves, look at the stems, make sure the plant looks healthy, make sure it has a good color to it, make sure it doesn't have any disease spots on it. I even tell people don't be afraid to take it out of the pot and look at the roots, make sure the roots look healthy.
That's not a bad idea, but it's not something we often do, that's
for sure.
We don't
often do because we're afraid that people are going to look at us funny at the nursery taking plants out of the pots. But
And oftentimes they come in six packs and things like that.
Correct.
But you can always take one out.
You can always take one out.
And see if they're in a good root system on that plant.
Right. You want a good root system that's going to fill the container that it's in, but you also don't want roots that are filling it too much that there's not much soil left. You don't want the roots coming out of the bottom of the pot. You don't want them to be what we call pot bound.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And oftentimes that is if they've been sitting too long in the nursery.
Right.
But
yes.
You can still work on that a little bit.
You can work
correct?
On that a little bit, right. And be a little leery of those 50% off plants, because a lot of times they're in that discount area because there's a problem with them. So
problem with them or they're wrong season.
Wrong season. And you don't want to spend the money and bring them home and have them die or introduce other diseases or insects into your garden if they're sick.
You know, I heard something, and oftentimes it's something that I try to emphasize when I'm doing workshops, is our plants need to get a good start when we're planting.
Mm-hmm.
And hydrating them creates at least a good start from there if you've got a healthy plant. But I tell people just take a bucket of sun-warmed water and dunk them in.
Yes.
And leave them there, and it'll do two things, drowner and hydrate them.
Right, right.
And that helps.
Yeah, when you first get your plants, you have to remember they have a very small root system, so they don't have access to water in the landscape. So you need to provide them with the water. Either if you soak them before you stick them into the ground, you also want to soak the ground so the dry soil doesn't wick away the moisture from those tender roots. But then newly planted plants need watered frequently. As the roots grow, then you can water them less frequently.
Have you had much experience with succulents? I don't know how prevalent succulents are in Florida.
Yes, we have a few succulents. They are popular more as container garden plants, but not used much in landscapes.
I see.
And the reason is because we do have a lot of water, and the succulents would probably rot from too much water
if they're in the
Florida.
Wrong place.
Right.
if they're subject. What kind of soil do you have in Florida?
Florida has very sandy soils.
It's
all sand, so things drain very quickly. Nutrients drain very quickly. It's kind of growing plants hydroponically because you don't have any.
Sure.
It doesn't hold water or nutrients.
And we have just the opposite now. Are you experiencing the clay type of soil that we seem to have, or is probably more prevalent west of the Mississippi River, I think, from some studies that I've done? It's more loamy on the east and east of the Mississippi, and on the west we have more clay.
Right.
For some reason.
Right, it seems, for some reason, except in Central Florida, where I'm from, it's pure sand.
Wow.
Just pure sand, yep.
Where was your background, did you say, in Florida?
I worked in Orlando, Kissimmee area, which is right in Central Florida.
Sure.
Yes, and that's where, you know, millions of years ago where the Gulf of Mexico and the Atlantic Ocean met, and so we call that the Sand Ridge. So there's a little buildup of sand that goes straight through the center of Florida.
I see. Well, that That's an interesting. Now, coming here to California, I know you said like the weather, the lower humidity, but the gardening conditions. Can we talk about that for a couple minutes?
Sure, definitely.
What are your thoughts? What are you finding as you're exploring through San Diego and Orange counties?
The vast amounts of fruit and vegetables that can be grown here in San Diego and
different
Orange
types,
County.
Right?
Yeah, the different types is just amazing. I mean, having all the little microclimates in Southern California is really neat to see that you can grow subtropical fruits such as citrus, but you can also grow some temperate fruits.
Right,
like grapes and apples and such,
right.
and just a small, area.
And microclimates is we abound in them,
right.
from coastal, which people don't understand that the fog that does is great for vegetables because they stay longer. They don't get. Doesn't get real hot,
right.
And they're ready and gone, right?
Correct. In Florida, from the months of May through August, you can't grow any vegetables.
Gotcha.
It's just too hot, way too hot. The sun's too strong, and nothing will survive, except maybe some okra.
Well, it's interesting. February 1st, almost a month ago, I had my first peach blossoms come out.
Wow.
And I can't remember February 1st.
You're going to have some early peaches this year.
Yeah, and I've got three different varieties in a small area.
Okay.
It's called Backyard Orchard.
Right.
You're familiar with.
Mm-hmm.
But that's an interesting process. And gosh, our climate seems to be changing a little.
It does, just a little bit.
Now, for our listeners and our aspiring gardeners, do you have any recommendations other than maybe what we talked about a little bit here, a little bit there on bugs and area that will help a gardener, other than what we talked maybe, keep as bug-free or as pest-free as possible?
Yes, there's one thing I want to make sure is that people visit their garden and their landscape on a regular basis. Because I'm sure in the hotline, the master gardeners get a lot of questions. Overnight, my tree died. Overnight, my plant died. And usually,
That's not the case.
It's just that you might not have looked at that plant in quite a while. So you definitely want to visit your garden. And if it's a vegetable garden, I'd go out at least once a week. If it's a landscape garden, a few times a month. And look at your plants. Look under the leaves. Look at the stems and the trunk. And make sure they look healthy. If something is starting to look a little sick, try to figure out what it is. You might have to be a detective because it could be a water problem. It could be a nutrient problem. It could be just that the plant's old. Sometimes plants die just because they're old.
Don't talk about me like that.
But that's one thing. And the other thing I want to mention is just we talked about keeping your garden clean, but also keep your tools clean. We forgot to mention tools.
That is right. What a great piece of advice. Any suggestions on that?
Yeah, there's a couple ways. When you're with your pruners and your saws, it's important to clean them between plants, especially if a plant looks sick. And you can do this by dipping them in a 10% rubbing alcohol solution. Some people will just have a can of Lysol with them in the garden and spray the tools. You can use a pine saw solution, 10% pine saw solution, also to clean them off. And what you're doing is you're cleaning off the diseases that might be on the blades.
Gotcha. Also, sharpening on a regular basis makes for a clean cut.
A clean cut that the plant can heal or build up that callus better. If it's a jagged cut or if it's the wrong cut on a plant, the plant can't callus over and can't protect itself from disease and insect entry.
That Those are great pieces of advice for our listeners, and things that we sometimes overlook. And now that we're getting into the growing season as such, even though here we grow 12 months of the year, but we're getting into the time when gardeners get more active in the garden because they see things growing again.
And the weather's so nice right now, too.
Perfect gardening weather,
isn't
it?
It is perfect gardening weather.
Yes. Can you talk a little bit more about bugs that you see coming from Florida to possibly reaching California or have already reached? How many do we get a year, maybe?
California gets about 6 invasive insects that come into California every year.
Are these all bad?
Yeah, these are the bad ones. So there might be some good ones that come in. There might be some insects that come in that don't really become established, but there's 6 that cause harm to our to agriculture, to our landscapes, to our gardens, come in every year. So that's once every few months.
I would say.
Yeah.
Do they come at a particular time of the year or all through the year?
All through the year, I would say, but they typically come in with travel. Somebody comes in from another country, they might bring a piece of fruit or a piece of plant or a seed that they don't realize has an insect or disease on it, and it's transplanted here in California, or comes through a shipment on boxes of off ships, pallets. A lot of our wood-destroying insects come from pallets from the ships. So these tiny, tiny insects, a lot of them are really hard to detect. And so since they're hard to detect, even though we have inspectors out there, sometimes they get through.
And when they get through, we don't have a solution to suppress them.
We don't have a
for
solution.
For a while.
Right. Sometimes they aren't even recognized for a while that they are a potential threat to the landscapes. So there's a shot hole borer that's attacking the trees.
Right. That's a big issue. I see it on our hotline all the time.
Yeah.
That's one thing I was going to mention, long as you reminded me, because when we're talking about bugs and pests, one of the big deals is to be able to suppress them is to be able to identify them.
Correct.
Maybe you could give us a little advice on that, but I would like, in the meantime, for our listeners to write down where they can get them on our website. The Plant ID websites are great for identifying what kind of issues you have. And just go to www.uccemg.com. Or if you're really having a problem, go to our hotline. And this is to help you, our listeners here in Orange County, to solve problems that you can't seem to get solved in your nursery or by yourself. And that's hotline, HOTLINE, at UCCEMG.com. That'll be of great help to you. And those are some great things. But give us a few ideas.
The main thing is to know what you're growing in your landscape and in your garden. If you can identify the plant, you can probably figure out what the insect is, because most insects aren't generalists, which means that most insects aren't going to feed on every plant in your garden. They're going to have their favorite plant, and they're going to be. So if you can identify the plant, if you go online or you call the hotline and you say you have a certain plant, then the master gardeners can look at a list of pests that are common to that plant and help you identify
and give you solutions.
Correct.
So
plant ID is important and insect ID is important, because not every problem on your plant is going to be an insect. So you don't want to automatically grab the insecticide or the chemical and start spraying for insects when it could be a water issue or could be a nutrient issue or could be a disease.
Or a placement.
Right, exactly. Right.
Or
plant, right
some
place.
Of the simple solutions that you gave us early that are really important this time of year particularly, when things are starting to grow again, things become alive and some of them aren't all that good.
And all that new growth that's starting on the plants now is the most susceptible to insects.
Vulnerable. They're still infants.
Yes, because those small leaves are very tender, which the mouth parts of the insects can feed on them a lot easier than the mature leaves.
Good. I like that. I know you have a couple of subjects you want to talk about, I think.
Okay.
So we've got a few minutes to go. Could you give us a few ideas or thoughts that stick with you as you are out and about and doing your research and study and advising? And
the one thing that I guess you could say, I don't want to say it's a pet peeve, but
that's
when you
what
see
I like,
the
those pet
peeves.
Peeves.
The one thing that's my biggest pet peeve is associated with our landscape trees and shrubs. And when I see landscape trees and shrubs that are pruned improperly, it just kind of hurts my heart a little bit because there are proper ways to prune trees. And not everybody with a chainsaw knows how to prune a tree. And
especially the people that come by and say, I'll do this for you.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah, you want to make sure that if you're having a professional come out to prune your trees, that they know what they're doing. So it might be that you want to make sure that they are insured because there's a lot of injuries with tree work, and so you don't want them to get hurt on your property.
On your property. Your insurance.
Exactly. And we also want to make sure that they're licensed, make sure they have a business license. And I also want to stress people to make sure that they're a certified arborist. A certified arborist is a person who has taken that extra step to study about trees, to learn how to care for them properly, to learn how to prune the trees properly so that they can have the best health after they're pruned. And
the time to prune mm-hmm. is not when they're fully grown.
Right.
But early.
Early, yes. You want to have an early maintenance.
Get a good start.
Good start so they have a good structure so those large trees will be strong as they grow and they won't have weak limbs that might fall off in
and
a windstorm.
Nice.
And they look nicer too, exactly. But
what a pet peeve. Thank you very
so
much.
So many for trees bringing. That are pruned improperly. And I know the listeners have seen them out there and just cringe. So.
I would like to know somebody who has not improperly. And the trees are expensive and take a lot of years to grow.
They do. They're worth a lot of money.
One of my pet peeves is placement mm-hmm. of trees.
Correct.
You know, having trees is a great thing. It provides many benefits. Here in Southern California, it's where we like to have a backyard garden like a vegetable garden. It's almost impossible because the trees that are planted are all shade, mm-hmm. so you have very little to plant if you
right.
only have a short time to plant. And it's amazing, and this is a little history. 30 years ago, our acreage was a lot bigger. Mm-hmm. But since the growth in the counties, we have big houses on small yards, whereas we used to have small houses on big yards.
Correct.
And that creates a whole different area as far as...
And
tree placement.
It does, and tree selection is important too. You need to look at the mature size of these trees that are being planted, and if it, and in 10, 15 years, are they going to still fit in the space that they're planting? Are the roots not going to tear up the sidewalks or the foundation of your house?
Or their foundations.
Yes, so you need to definitely study up on trees before planting them, because there's trees for all areas. It's just finding the right one.
Have you done any recommendations on replacing in landscape? Because I know landscape is a dear interest to you.
Right.
But in replacing lawns and et cetera for a more available area.
More efficient.
Efficient.
We need to remember, go back to the right plant for the right place. There are proper uses of turf grass, and there are improper uses of turf grass. And it's not the grass or the lawn that uses the water, it's the person that uses the water. And so if you want to have lawn, you need to learn how to water it appropriately. Most lawns in Southern California, from what I understand, are watered too much. And that's from the user, not because of the lawn.
And, you know, in recent years, in the past 10, 15 years, turf has changed.
Right.
To become more water efficient.
Correct. We found new cultivars that require less water. We can train them to have deeper root systems to require less water. And we need to, as homeowners, we need to try to lose the thought that our lawns have to be perfectly green all the time. We need to remember that some lawns will go in dormancy, so they might turn brown. We might need to realize that the grass might not be all green, that we might have some dead spots now and then. But most importantly, we need to make sure that if we are using an irrigation system, that it's an efficient irrigation system, putting out the right amount of water at the right times, too.
Great. The controllers are very important. And the water districts will often supply these at a reduced price to the citizens.
Correct. Yes.
And that's interesting. One other thought, you know, there's a lot of cities that say the new green is brown. Well, I don't particularly like that. I like green. I worked on golf courses for a lot of years when I was playing golf and when I was going to college and after I retired. But to me, the most important thing is that doesn't mean you don't maintain.
No.
Because you can still make it look pretty, even though it may not be as emerald green as you like at all times.
Correct. And if you choose not to have a lawn, plant a ground cover, plant some other plants. You can't have bare ground, because bare ground, you're going to lose a lot of soil to erosion. You need to have plants to help with the cooling effect, and turf is a great plant to help with the cooling effect.
That's for sure.
All the rock and stones adding to gardens is going to increase the warmth and the heat around your gardens. It's great as a ornamental look, but for the cooling effect, it's not going to. You need to add some plants into that garden too, into that landscape too, for sure.
Makes a big difference.
It does.
So
it does.
Grass isn't always a sin to have.
It is not. It's just finding the right type of grass, watering it appropriately, and having an efficient irrigation system.
And many of us over a period of years don't have that.
Correct. Yes.
Any longer.
Right.
We may never have had it.
No.
But use modern techniques. Mm-hmm. And go on our website that I mentioned. And there are many, many articles, including videos, that will help you along, make it so much easier and so much more. You will be the envy of your neighborhood, believe me.
Right. We don't want everybody just to have dead landscapes, because that's not having any benefit to anyone or to the environment. You need to have some green in your landscape for sure, whether it be shrubs or lawn or trees.
Jennifer, you have done a great job in giving advice. Got any more things that you would like? Any more pet peeves?
Any more pet peeves? I just want people to be aware of their gardens. Like I said, visit your gardens, visit your landscapes, and just remember things don't happen overnight. And remember to use the Master Gardeners as a resource. That's the hotline. Call the hotline and use them.
That's what
service.
We're here for.
Yes.
And if you would like to see our program or listen to our programs on from In the Garden that have been on in the past, you can go to our website, uccemg.com, and go to radio shows and listen to the podcast.
Yep.
So if something hit you, go back and listen to it, and that will be good. Well, listeners, we've had a real privilege today having Jennifer here with us, and she drove up here from San Diego this morning just to be on this show. Thank you so much, Jennifer. You did a great job, and I am anxious to hear you more as we go down the road, especially after we get through our summer season, and we'll talk some more about what differences, the things that you are seeing, because you probably, coming from Florida, have a whole different eye than most of us that have been here for a while. And you can see things that we are slow on or haven't picked up on that is obvious to you.
Right. There's definitely some differences between Florida and California that I'm noticing.
Well,
sure.
I know you with your eyes, you will see those things, and I'm excited for you.
Thank you.
Thank you for coming out here.
Thanks for having me.
And, I mean, not only for, I mean, coming from Florida to California, usually people go the other way.
It's getting too hot in Florida.
There you go. Well, I have family that lives there.
Oh, okay.
So. Anyway, thanks to our listeners. Remember, we're on every week. Just listen for us. Go on the KUCI website, KUCI.org website. Go to radio shows. Pick up our schedule. I know we have a new schedule coming up, but it'll probably be the same time as now. But thank you again for listening. Tune us back in next week.